Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Dom Giordano on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Hello, Bucks County. How you doing tonight?
Hey.
If you don't recognize my voice, my name is Dan Borowski, the producer of the Dom Giordano program with
Anthony DiRenzo, and I'm the host of The Other Side, producer Kalen Company and the Dawn Stensland Show.
So tonight is the first time we're back here with a live audience, Politics and Pines. Thank you, everybody, for coming out. And I got to say, one of the greatest things about radio, Anthony, is the community that we can build and being able to see all the fans and listeners out here. And there's something great that we built with the Dom Giordano program. We have some great listeners sitting in the front row here. We have some VIPs that donated greatly to Travis Mannion Foundation. Thank you guys for doing that. I really appreciate that.
Give them a round of applause. Yeah. Yeah, but thank you, guys. It is great to be back here, especially after, a little bit of a halt with COVID. But we thank you guys all for listening. Stuff like this is why we do what we do every day. And Dan, why do you think Dom Giordano can land big guests like this?
It's because, Anthony, it's nice to say that Dom is now the highest rated local talk show host in the entire country via Talkers.
Yeah.
Congratulations. And we continue to beat Howard Stern, which is fantastic. And I got to thank also to Zlock Community Arts Center. Thanks for having us. Really appreciate it. But, Anthony, let's get to the show. Let's get out of the way. First up, Anthony, who do we got?
Dom Giordano, come on out to the stage.
And I want to hear a loud, raucous round of applause for your next... Your guy, Dom Giordano. Let's go. Get louder. Come on.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Want to introduce Senator Paul?
Oh, you want me to?
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, you
That's
Dom
your
Giordano
job here.
Live. Here we go. And then we have the author of Deception, the great COVID cover-up, the great Senator Rand Paul.
Yeah.
Boy, mine was almost as loud as yours, Dom.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Senator. I wanted you to know this is the first bourbon-aided interview or show I've ever done. I haven't tasted it all. I never drank vodka until Mulligan's a summer ago, but it was so masqueraded with other things, I'm not sure what it was. So let's salute Senator Rand Paul. And let's hope that we have many more voices in the Senate, in the House, like the senator.
But there's one thing you have to know about bourbon. It's not bourbon unless it comes from Kentucky. All right?
I just want to, you don't have to answer this, Senator, but I wanted to start off with where our listeners are with Dr. Fauci. We asked for... Feel free. We asked for questions from listeners. We stopped at around 100, but this one jumped out at me. Why can't Dr. Anthony Fauci be arrested by a sheriff? So it's kind of like Andy Mayberry's going to show up, and the person we tracked him down, the reason was a sheriff is elected, not like a police superintendent who can be dismissed. So this guy thought it through. The sheriff can elect him, arrest him. And you can't do anything about it.
So every week I fly up to Washington at the beginning of the week. I fly back at the end of the week. My wife, we've been married 33 years. She greets me at the door. And I think, well, maybe I'll get a kiss. Maybe I'll get a martini. Maybe I'll get a hug. But you know what I get every week when I come home? How come Anthony Fauci's not in jail yet? So it is a common question, and we release some news this week on it. And the first 10 things on the internet responding on Twitter are like, "Why is he not in jail?" And it's not for lack of trying. I mean, I've referred him twice to the Department of Justice, to the Attorney General. I don't have prosecutorial power. I don't have the ability to bring charges. Now, the sheriff's an interesting idea on it, and other people have said, why don't you send it to the local U.S. attorney for D.C.? I've done that also. Now, the sheriff, I'm guessing we don't get a lot more out of the sheriff of D.C., but they're all Democrats. I mean, they all have protected him. He got million-dollar prizes. There's still, to this day, not one glove that's been laid on him by a Democrat. They don't care.
Does it have to be?
Probably. The venue probably has to be, I don't know how you'd go to another venue, because the crimes and everything are committed by the government, probably in Washington. Now, the way you could get him is if he came out for Donald Trump, they'd arrest him tomorrow.
So let's start with the book. How many people have read the book so far? I know you got your copy tonight. No one has read it? All right. I will tell you...
Come on, it's not that long. You could have finished it while you were waiting.
I will tell you, I thought I knew a lot about it till I reread it, and the things that were here in the book are startling. They're very much worth taking your time with it and going back several times, other than when are we going to get Fauci. So let's start with the fact, just in the last, 48 hours or so, you've been leading the news in a couple of days around 15 government agencies that knew... or had very good belief that the virus started in the Wuhan lab. And when you say covered it up, did they aggressively cover it up, or they just didn't pay attention to it, or did they not answer questions on it?
So for 3 years, I've been trying to get information from the government, from your government, from our government, the government you pay for, to get information about what they knew, whether or not they were in collaboration with the lab, whether we were funding the lab in Wuhan. I've gotten almost nothing from the federal government. Almost zero. Almost everything I know is from a couple whistleblowers, people who work in the government, who had to quietly come to us, risk their job to tell us the truth, and from Freedom of Information Act. But it's extraordinary what we have found out. I don't think there's ever been a cover-up this extensive. And one of the most important things we learned from a whistleblower was that in 2018, 2 years before this, the Wuhan lab, with Dr. Barrick in UNC and Peter Daszak at EcoHealth, submitted a proposal to take a coronavirus and to stick a special cleavage site, a furin cleavage site in it, to make it more infectious in humans. Now, they didn't get the money for it, but they presented this to DARPA, which is a secretive agency, part of the Department of Defense, and it was denied. But the people at DARPA would have known about this, and when they saw the virus, COVID-19, come out, and it looked just like the virus they were trying to create, wouldn't you think DARPA would be calling us up and saying, my goodness, they've done it. This is what they told us they would do, and they've done it. But nobody at DARPA called us, other than this whistleblower about a year later found it, and he didn't find it immediately. He's a lieutenant colonel in the Marines. He's a stand-up guy. And he looked in a folder where he thought this information was, and the folder was empty. And then there was an exchange between myself and Fauci, and he got interested in it again. He went back to the folder, and it was there. And he found this project, and this was DARPA, one agency. But they told no one. So they see the virus, COVID-19, looking exactly like what the proposal was for, which should have tipped them off that this is where it came from. But what we discovered this week is that proposal to create a coronavirus and put a cleavage site in it, a furin cleavage site in it, that it was presented to 15 agencies. So now we're not talking about one group of people being quiet about this. We're talking about 15 different people. And among the agencies that were there were NIH and NIAID, which is Fauci's division. And not only were they at the presentation to know that Wuhan wanted to create this virus, they also were part of the project initially. We didn't know that until this week. The Rocky Mountain Lab in Colorado deals with pathogens and deals with these dangerous viruses and does gain-of-function research in Colorado. They were part of this in the beginning. There's no way Fauci didn't know about this. We think he's lied again, and I've referred him again for prosecution just this week.
Now, the beginning... The beginning of the book, the part that got me rereading it again this time, reads like a novel. There are burner phones. There are spies. There are Fauci and minions. I don't know about everyone here. Maybe you don't have memory. I used to see Dr. Fauci, and I told Senator Paul, with Chris Wallace on Sunday, seemed to be authoritative. It seemed to be pretty reasonable. I never saw anything, and I was shocked. Were you, though, that it went to the level of burner phones and spies and CIA the last day or so we've heard about?
The beginning of the description of the cover-up isn't like it just sort of gradually builds. It reaches a crescendo in one day. January 27th of 2020, there's an email at 6 in the afternoon, and it's one of Fauci's assistants. The email comes in, and it says, it looks like we were funding some research, some gain-of-function research. He puts that in there. 7 o'clock, there's another email from a world-famous virologist, Christian Anderson. He says it looks like it's been manipulated. 10 o'clock, there's another email, Christian Anderson again saying, we all agree, 4 other world-renowned virologists, looks like it's been manipulated. And they all say, he says, we all believe that it's inconsistent with evolutionary theory, inconsistent with the natural way that viruses mutate. It looks like it's been manipulated. They're all saying this privately. And then what got me intrigued with writing the book was everything they were saying in private, they were saying the opposite in public. But we learned all of this not because they told the truth, but we caught them through Freedom of Information Act.
Somebody, I wouldn't call him quite a hero. I had him on a couple times, the head of the CDC in the beginning, Redfield. He did seem like a guy who jousted with Fauci. He's the head of the CDC. How is it that Fauci had the ability to keep him out of the discussions that were going on? And I guess this was on the cusp of knowing about COVID, something really important. This guy heads the CDC.
So the one thing I learned was this didn't start with COVID. 10 years prior to COVID, 10 years prior to COVID, about 2009, 2010, a researcher in the Netherlands takes the avian flu. And you're hearing about the avian flu now because they're killing all these chickens. We've heard about it over the years. Occasionally they'll kill a couple million chickens in China. Now they're doing some of it in our country as well. But he took the avian flu, which is very infectious in birds, but not very infectious in humans. And this is traditionally the way animal viruses are. That's why we don't think COVID-19 was an animal virus, because it turned out to be so infectious. But the avian flu is infectious in chickens and not very much in humans, but can occasionally infect a human. So if it's not a manipulated virus and it's natural, we probably don't have to worry so much about avian flu. But if you catch it, you got a 50% chance of dying, so you don't want to catch it. But it's not very contagious. But about 10 years ago, some guy said, hey, let's try to mutate it and make it spread through the air. And let's try to mutate it and spread through the air to mammals. And he did it. He was able to devise with 8 planned mutations, he was able to devise this, and it went for preprint. And all the scientists, or at least half the scientists, were saying, oh my God, we shouldn't be printing that. That's a roadmap for terrorists and rogue nations to create deadly viruses to kill us all. 50% mortality. Who would want, if that got out, it could destroy humanity as we know it. And that was in 2010. But as the debate moved forward, Anthony Fauci says in 2012 that, yes, a pandemic could occur if a scientist is bitten or a virus leaks out. But if it does, the knowledge will be worth the risk. Wow. That, to me, is the worst judgment I've ever heard of anybody in charge of anything in government, anywhere, at any level. And for that, he should be pilloried for the rest of history.
Later on in your book, and I was going to get to that, but I think right now it's apropos. One of the big things we talked about backstage is the expert, the authoritarian expert, the all-knowing expert, the central planner Hayek you talk about in the book, with that and the danger of that. And we do see, I'm not sure if every one of your colleagues on the left shares that, but they always try to resort back to we don't know commonsensically. For example, you're not an infectious disease doctor, right. So you're only a doctor and someone who right. has the reality of being a senator combined with that. You can't possibly challenge the great Fauci, even if you're respectful to his specialty.
So Frederick Hayek was an Austrian economist. They believed in laissez-faire capitalism. They believed that, for the most part, government mucked up capitalism and made it worse. And so they made this argument, but one of the arguments he made was that technocracies like socialism. They come forward and say, we all have the experts. We have the smartest people in agriculture and manufacturing. We'll put them in charge. It'll be just so much less messy than having everybody decide. But what Hayek postulated was that your combined knowledge, there's 300 of you here, your combined knowledge is greater than one expert. Now, one expert may have knowledge you don't have, but it's like the marketplace. Is the stock market smart? Well, the stock market has millions of people interacting. Do they make mistakes? Yeah, but what if we put Anthony Fauci in charge of the entire stock market? That'd be better. You know, and this is what we do when we put Jerome Powell in charge of the stock market through the Federal Reserve. You're centralizing things, but let's say he's fallible and he's human like the rest of us and makes a mistake. If he makes a mistake, it affects the whole country and the whole world. But if one of you make a mistake and you're one of the 10 million people that bought and sold stocks today, you didn't do it all. It had to be a preponderance of you, and it might be corrected tomorrow by a preponderance of the people trading. But if you give this power to one person and they make mistakes, like education, would you rather have a local? I met somebody tonight on the Board of Education in Bucks County. And the thing is, would you rather elect those people locally and have them in charge of your curriculum, or would you rather send someone to Washington who decides that, you know, if your little boy wants to wear a dress, we'll change him at school, and then we'll change him back before we send him home? That's what happens if you put one person in Washington in charge of it. It has to be fought out at the local level. So we're always better, and we have more chances to fight for what we are, the smaller the unit of government that's controlling us. I'd rather we not be controlled, but the smaller the unit, the better.
People like a Bernie Sanders, somebody you talk about in the book.
Have to go there?
Yeah. It seems like somebody you can talk with, though. I'm not saying AOC. That's for the lightning round later, your sense of that. Do they share what we just said, though? Is that ideological that they think experts are the way to go?
Here's the weird thing. There is some overlap with Bernie Sanders. He actually voted for audit the Fed, so he has some distrust of big banks and big government banks. So we have that in common. Sometimes on foreign policy, we've had some things in common. He's distrustful of big pharma manipulating government for their own advantage and profit, and frankly, so am I. But when I ask him, like, there's a bill that I've been trying to get through, and I finally did get it through the committee. The people on the vaccine committees, on the FDA and the CDC that are approving your vaccines and telling you whether you have to take it and your kids have to take it, do you think they should divulge if they get royalties from the vaccine manufacturers? It'd be like your school board. If the woman here who's on the school board, if she owned the textbook company and they're...
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Going to buy textbooks for $10 million in the county, wouldn't she have to divulge that she owned the textbook company? You'd put her in jail if she didn't divulge that. That's what we expect. But Fauci, in committee, when directly challenged, looked at me and said, we don't have to tell you. The law says, and he cited some law. We disagree with the interpretation, but now we've passed a new law. It passed unanimously in committee. It hadn't become a law yet, but it passed committee. I got the Democrats on board with it to say that they have to reveal all of their royalties from all the companies.
I think I told you backstage, this very auditorium with Brian Kilmeade was the last speaker series that we did. And we had some huge speaker series when Nick Foles quarterbacked the Eagles in 2017 to the championship. I always do that. Nick Foles always gets. It was amazing. So it's kind of amazing that we have you, this book, and we're back here in the same place tonight. And yet you seem to be every bit as engaged. What keeps Rand Paul going when it appears you have a number of people, the smarter people, I would argue, Mike Lee, Massey,
But you're saying they're smarter than me? Come on now.
Well,
I mean, I thought I was here to be complimented.
Yeah,
not to
well,
be insulted.
Well, you were at the head of the round table of these guys.
I just went to medical school. I'm just some guy.
Anyway,
those are very smart guys. Mike Lee is one of the smartest in the Senate. I have great admiration for him. Work together with him all the time. And he does. He's got a nose for the detail of legislation and law because he's been part of the law for a long time. So he has a great deal of input to the liberty cause. I would say he's closer to me than anybody else, and Massey would be too in the House. But between myself, Mike Lee, and Massey, I would say we're the most libertarian Republicans in the Congress.
Are a lot of people, a lot of our listeners here tonight, they're Republicans, they're conservatives, but small L libertarian.
Right.
Talk radio, I believe, is basically, and you do a lot of it too. And over the years, I've become much more small L the Libertarian Party. Their platform is
That's
nuts.
What I keep saying, you know, Dom keeps getting better and better. You know? I just need to be on with him a few more times. I think he's coming around. Oh,
not enough. Once a month we need to do. So, Senator, are you seeing more of that? Or are there more people? Are you getting more of the...
Well, I'll give you an example. And I'm not an extremist on the vaccine. My in-laws, I recommended that they get vaccinated. They were over 65. In fact, it's interesting. Voluntarily, most people was voluntary unless you had to get it through work. But I'd say 80-90% of us, we had a choice. 97% of people over 65 took the vaccine. So really, a lot of people took it because they thought, looked like people are dying in my age group, and they took it.
Mm-hmm.
But then younger people, it's about 5% of five-year-olds have it. And I think it ought to be zero. But the thing is I'm more open to it. I would never force anybody on it. But like my in-laws, I told them it was probably the vaccine was less dangerous than the disease. But it depends on the individual, too. If you're 100 pounds overweight and you're 75 years old, I probably would have taken it in 2020. Now, the disease is less bad now. If you've had it three times, you probably don't need anything. And the thing is if you were perfectly thin and healthy in 75, you might not have needed anything. The bottom line, it's always your choice. It's sort of like masks. I think the masks largely don't work. But if you were 75 years old and your spouse had COVID, my advice to you would be wear an N95 when you go in to treat them or to take them food. If you're going in three times a day, wear a different one each time, gloves each time, wash your hands when you come out if you're trying not to get it. You still may get it, but it might do it. But if you want to wear it while hiking down the Appalachian Trail by yourself, you're an idiot. or you're a Democrat, or you're both.
So, Senator, let's go to the...
Can we say that on the air?
Oh, absolutely, yes. Dan, make sure we play that tomorrow. Let's go to the first event with Dr. Fauci, the first encounter with Dr. Fauci. And we play, you probably know this, it's the fodder of talk radio. We love that event. We play it forever, all these encounters with Fauci. But take us inside, the very first time you're with him. What are you thinking? Are you, you know, honestly, are you a bit nervous? This guy's infectious disease. He's renowned. You're going to be somebody poking at him, and nobody else does.
The first time I met with him, I think it was March of 2020. I didn't really know who he was. I mean, I think he's pretty famous, but I didn't really know who he was at the time. He got more famous over time. I knew he'd been around the AIDS debate for a long time, and Robert Redfield had been on the other side of some of the AIDS debate over time. The first time I went in, if you read the dialogue and watch the dialogue the first time, it's not that contentious. We go through it. I ask him and I grill him a little bit about schools because I was already of the inclination that we knew enough. Even in March of 2020, this wasn't killing kids and we shouldn't close the schools down. So we debated that a little bit. But then the last question I ask him, and I think this is the most telling, and it's also a good point about why you don't want to trust experts and why one person shouldn't be in charge. I have a good friend who's an orthopedic surgeon, and he was having to remove someone's leg where they lost the circulation. It was gangrenous. So he's removing the leg, and there was some bleeding occurred, and somehow a drop of blood from that splashed into, and he had an open wound on his toe, went through his shoes to his toe, and he got the flesh-eating bacteria.
Oh,
70% of people lose multiple limbs. And you've probably met some people. I've met a couple people who are quadriplegics from losing all their limbs from the flesh-eating bacteria. Now, this is not a virus. It's a bacteria, but it has the same sort of common pathway. In the end, when you're really sick, the blood vessels in your lung leak, and you just leak fluid. You know, it's called severe acute respiratory syndrome. That could be from a lot of things. But anyway, he was getting it, and that's the end pathway, the way you die from a lot of different infectious disease. But what they learned is if you give them high-dose IV steroids throughout this and early enough, you can save their lives. He got all of it and was kept all of his limbs, and he back and he practiced his medicine again. And so I asked Anthony Fauci, have you tried high-dose IV steroids? It's something we've had for 70 years. It's a common drug. We know how to use it. It's sitting there on the shelf. He says, well, we've tried that. It doesn't work. So I had friends that are out there using it. They were reversing using it because Fauci's telling them not to do it, and the hospitals are saying you can't use it. Doctors have always had the freedom to try what they think works, and you could go to a doctor. We started putting doctors in jail for giving you an anti-inflammatory, and the test is somewhat equivocal on whether ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine work, but there is a theory behind them because they're anti-inflammatories, but the same with steroids. In the end, when they did all of this, so Fauci really pushed remdesivir, which came from a drug company, was very, very expensive, and some people now think, actually a lot of people died from the remdesivir as well as the disease. However, though, if you look at steroids like 10 cents for a dose. I mean, it's just nothing. Steroids cost nothing. If you look at steroids, it was a 36% reduction in death from severely ill. So you're either going on the ventilator or you're on the ventilator, and a 36% reduction with steroids, which shows you the problem. It is the virus, but then it's your body's reaction to the virus, which is why some of the doctors started saying, well, why don't we give inhaled steroid? If your kid has a little bit of asthma or a cold or something, you can call in. Your pediatrician will call that in over the phone. It's safe enough. You don't want to use it forever, but for a week or two for your kid, they'll call that in, or for you. It's very safe. But then his hospital was preventing him from using it because it wasn't approved. Moronic stuff. And one other thing we'll go on the treatment. When they approved the monoclonal antibodies, which could save your life and I think did save lives, you weren't allowed to take them as an inpatient. It was under an emergency use, and you could only do it as an outpatient. People were calling me desperate. My wife's got COVID. They're going to put her on the ventilator, and they won't give her the monoclonal antibodies. And I'm saying, tell them to wheel them to the other side of the curtain that is the emergency room and then ask again. Literally, wow. You couldn't get it as an inpatient, but you could get it as an outpatient. That's when you centralize control too much, and an expert makes a decision instead of, you know, not everybody's perfect, not every doctor's perfect. Go to another doctor, but there are lots of us, and there's a lot of medicine. We figure stuff out not by uniformity, but by experimentation of what works and what doesn't work.
Question coming out of that with all the people we have here tonight, and I'll talk about it tomorrow. Do you think that's been reformed? In other words, if we're hit with something, not COVID, but something related, have you made enough impact, the rest of us made an impact on this? And I know you've called for a COVID commission, bipartisan. We want to see stuff where it's acknowledged as a matter of fact, or at least the opinion of the COVID commission. This is what happened. This shouldn't happen again.
There have been some improvements. So, for example, we fought against the vaccine mandate for the military. These are young, healthy, primarily men, but women too. But they're young and healthy, and you got to be fit to join the military. Frankly, they're pretty fit people, probably the lowest risk of anybody in our country. We did win that. We eventually won, and we got rid of the mandate. It's the first vaccine mandate that's ever been removed at the federal level. And that went from a fringe issue to the majority of the Republican caucus, and I think we finally even got a couple of Democrats to get rid of that. That's a positive. That's something that's on the negative side. They're still trying to put doctors in jail and take their license away. I met a doctor from Maine the other day. They're taking her license away because she gave ivermectin. And look, I'm not here to tell you ivermectin works or hydroxychloroquine. I'm here to tell you that there's some evidence says it does, some says it doesn't. It's sort of equivocal, but there's a theory that makes sense. They're anti-inflammatory. And we always allow doctors to give things off-label. And I'll give you an example. Hydroxychloroquine, it was initially an anti-malarial medicine. But you know what the most common use for it is now? Anybody have rheumatoid arthritis? It's called Plaquenil. Plaquenil is used by hundreds of thousands of people. And where people often were crippled by rheumatoid arthritis, there's less people that are now because of drugs like Plaquenil. But it's used off-label. It wasn't made for that. It was made for malaria. Ivermectin's made for, you know, parasitic infections and other things. But it's anti-inflammatory. It was being studied before they started parodying it. And I don't know if you saw this, but they sued the CDC over making fun of people saying you're taking horse medicine. It's not horse medicine. It's human. It is used in veterinary medicine, too, but it's used on humans. They sued the CDC and won. The CDC is having to retract, and I hope the CDC pays these people money, too.
You probably regret this, but I know I do, and I think listeners do. We want to hear more of this in presidential debate, presidential politics. What happened here? There's been no reckoning. The schools, as you know, I formerly was a teacher. I told you, Giordanoism at the high school level. The only one bringing it up is RFK Jr. So I've been waiting to ask you about him and what you think of his campaign. What's some of the upside?
So I had this discussion today on Hannity, and I had it yesterday on another program, and I haven't been very vocal about it, but I haven't endorsed Donald Trump. I'm friends with him. I've played golf with him a dozen times. I've been in and around the White House. I like him personally. But the lockdowns were a mistake, and I want to hear him say they were a mistake, and he's never, ever going to do the lockdowns again. The other thing I want to hear from him is that he's open to some people giving him some advice on who he should hire. So at the FDA, he hired Scott Gottlieb. Scott Gottlieb went from there to be a board member of Pfizer. Look, I love business. I love people who make lots of money. I hope you all make a lot. I hope to make a lot of money someday myself. I'm not against money. But I don't like to see the revolving door between government and big pharma. And then what made it worse is Scott Gottlieb went to Pfizer. He's on the board. And he's calling up Twitter and telling them to suppress your opinions as you express them on Twitter before Elon Musk got it. And so thank God for Elon Musk and thank God for freedom of speech.
Do you have any personal contact with Elon Musk?
A little bit. Not a lot.
But what's your estimation of
him? Fascinating, but maybe one of the most fascinating people on the planet. And, you know, if I were going to give a list of people I'd want to have dinner with, of course, after Dom, of course, you know, I'd have dinner with Dom. But I'd probably want to invite Elon Musk, too. So, but you asked a question about Bobby Kennedy. So I eventually am going to sit down with Donald Trump and talk to him about it. Some people who like me and some of the things I say are voting for Bobby Kennedy. I hear them all the time. And the thing is, they're going to have to hear, not just to please me, I'm just one voter, really, but if Trump wants to get those people who might go for an independent voter, he's got to be more succinct on it. And you know, he doesn't ever like to say he's wrong, but Scott Gottlieb was a bad pick. Bob Barr, or Bill Barr for AG, yeah. Bill Barr was a bad pick.
Right.
He knows it now. John Bolton, I told him not to hire John Bolton, and I blocked him from being Secretary of State, and he hired him anyway, and then he got mad at him and fired him. And now John Bolton's written 3 books attacking Trump and everything. It's like Trump needs to know who his friends are, and he needs to know who the people are, and he needs to quit picking people who aren't supportive of his policies to be in his administration. If he'll do that, I'll support him, but he's going to have to do more of that, and he's going to have to say that he'll never, you know, in April of 2020, he said Sweden was making a mistake, not locking down. Sweden had it right, and we had it wrong.
So let's go back to Robert Kennedy, though. I mean, there were rumors that he would talk with you about being VP. That's probably private, but come on, it's our job to ask anyhow.
So I was on Robert Kennedy's podcast yesterday.
Right.
And I've met with him in person. I think he gets the problem of crony capitalism and private corporations taking over parts of government better than anybody. So I would like to see him have an influence on what happens. As a Republican, it's hard to endorse outside of your party. It just frankly is. So there's a lot of limitations on that. And then there's some things that I'm not so sure where he is on the Second Amendment. I'm not so sure where he is on fracking and oil production and things like that. I think America needs to produce oil. There's a lot of jobs in it, and I would
right.
hate to see us not.
So. I'm saving it for a little bit later, but you as a VP choice. Now what you said about Trump, I guess you might not be on the short list with President Trump here.
Well, if he wants a rubber stamp, it's not going to be me. But the thing is that, and it's a hard job. I mean, there are not many jobs like being vice president. You do just, I mean, your job isn't really to go out and publicly confront the president, but you would want somebody who's at least privately going to confront. And look, Trump has many great instincts. As far as the people on foreign policy, no one that's been elected to president in the last 100 years comes as close to Donald Trump to my idea or my father's idea of less intervention. He's not a libertarian. He's not a non-interventionist. But he has a gut instinct that war isn't something we should desire, and that we should defend ourselves and we should be strong, but we shouldn't be eager.
We say this many times. That's going to be his legacy. The Republican Party, at least, open to that. And I agree with you in a strange way. That's what he's done by just his instinct, not big policy.
The things my dad talked about in 2008 and 2012 and sometimes was booed from the stage from people, those have now, with Donald Trump, become things that are acceptable to think about and to talk about. Most of our interventions and most of the monies we say send overseas, one, it's borrowed and it hadn't been effective. We give $3 billion a year to Egypt. Do you know that if you're a 14-year-old kid in Egypt and you send a text saying, hey, meet me at the rally, they'll arrest the 14-year-old kid, put him in jail. They shock him. They do all kinds of stuff. And it's run by a general, and there are no elections. They live under emergency law. Why would we be giving money to a country like that? And you don't have it. We got to borrow it from China to send it to Egypt or Ukraine or any of these places.
One person we haven't talked about tonight, and you mustn't have liked the scarves maybe, but you do kind of savage Dr. Birx in this book, I have to say. You didn't spare her either. There's a lot of chapters in there.
I see not a dime's worth of difference between Fauci and Birx. And I worked hard, and this is one thing where I did have some influence. I worked hard to get Donald Trump to hire Scott Atlas. Scott Atlas mm-hmm. was the first sane voice we got in there. He was brought in, hopefully, to counteract Fauci. But Fauci's head had, you remember how the Grinch's heart grew 10 times too large? Fauci's head had grown 10 times too large, and he loved the camera, and you couldn't budge the guy. I mean, every camera in town, he was in front of it. And it was always them sucking up to him, too. Everyone at ABC said, how are you? And I know Rand Paul was mean to you, and I know you're getting death threats. And what do you think we should do with the scourge of Rand Paul and the Republicans? Fauci and Birx, it wasn't much difference, and she was terrible and wrong on things, and she lied about a lot of stuff too. And she was, she made up. She was part of the making up the 6-foot distancing and things. It turns out that if you were really worried about COVID in March or April of things, you probably shouldn't be in a room with a lot of people that was 30 feet from people. You could catch it 30 feet from people. The plastic. Viruses are not dumb enough to run into the plastic, all right? They swim around the plastic. They go over the plastic. None of those things made any difference. In fact, I think almost nothing we did, and some people will disagree with me, but nothing we did other than the vaccine, which I think did have some benefit, and immunity, natural immunity. But they denied natural immunity the whole time. This is the thing. So in 2020, there's no vaccine. So put aside whether you like the vaccine or you're against the vaccine. What do you do in 2020? There is no vaccine. Well, the one thing we should have done in all of our nursing homes was have them staffed by people, young people, who had already gotten COVID. I told Trump's doctor this, too. I said, you want to protect Trump? He's at risk, his age, and he won't admit this. He's a little overweight. Sorry, Donald. But anyway, what I would have done is take the Secret Service people around. There's 2,000 Secret Service agents. They were getting COVID like everybody else. As soon as they got it and recovered, I'd put them in on the president's detail. And I'd try to have nobody on the detail that hadn't got it. And the reason that's important is, what if next year we have Ebola? Now they've aerosolized it. It's released from lab. It's 50% fatal. We'll try again. Monoclonal antibodies will take a couple months, and it's probably going to be our best bet. They'll probably try a vaccine, and you can decide whether you want to take it if it's 50% lethal. This one was 0.3% lethal. So we might all change our mind if it's 50% lethal. But there's all that. What do you do in the meantime? Try to get the healthy people around the people who are most vulnerable. Try to get the healthy young people who get it. And in this one, it was 1,000 times more dangerous for a 75-year-old than it was for a 15-year-old. And it was just apparent in the first month.
So we come to the part in your book where you get COVID, and I underlined here myself in bold letters, listen to your wife. The best prescription imaginable.
Yeah, I try. I don't always do the best job there.
She was taking it a bit more seriously. I wouldn't say.
She wanted me to get tested, and right. It's like it's a Monday. I'm flying back to Washington. The previous Thursday, after lunch, I'd had 2 glasses of tea, and I got a stomach that's a little tenuous. If I have an extra glass of tea or too much of that, I can have a little trouble with my stomach. So I wasn't feeling that great, but it kind of passed an hour later. I don't know if that was COVID. Monday, I come back, I've got like sniffles, but I get allergies in the spring anyway. I couldn't tell if I had a little allergy. I didn't feel bad at all. I didn't have a fever. I wasn't sick. She harangued me. See, I shouldn't have listened to her because I got tested on a Monday. And they kept the test for 6 days. They didn't tell me till Sunday. And so, of course, I like to play golf. I went out and walked 18 holes twice. I swam in the Senate pool. I did exercise every day.
Let's back up on that. That wasn't a good move, swimming in the Senate pool with COVID.
Well, here's what I defy these people who want to blame me for killing all the Senate. Nobody died, first of all, because most of these old guys can't get in the pool anymore. But here's the other thing. I defy you to tell me that someone's caught a virus while in a swimming pool. It's full of chlorine, and viruses you get through the air, droplets, sneezing, coughing, things like that, you don't get them in the swimming pool. But I didn't do it on purpose. They wouldn't tell me my damn test, and I had no symptoms. And really, what were the rules? After a while, the rules were once your symptoms were gone, you could go back to work. In the very end, they were sending doctors back to work with masks.
doctors and nurses with masks on with COVID. I think that was a dumb idea, actually, to send people to work. You know, all these senators, when you see them on the floor now, these Democrats, when you see them with a mask on the floor, the reason they're wearing the mask is they have COVID. It used to be in the old days, we would just tell you to stay home. If you got the flu, stay home. This was a little harder because there was asymptomatic spread. But at the same time, we didn't really use common sense. And the other problem was this was developed in a laboratory, so it was pre-adapted to be infectious among very infectious among humans, and most animal viruses aren't that infectious.
The thing I really enjoyed in the book is Stephen Colbert. All right, we often
don't get
the
me
mockery.
Started.
The guy's not telling too many jokes, but he tried a lot of Rand Paul jokes, and I think your early time with him was okay.
I was on with him twice before COVID,
right?
And actually, towards the beginning of being elected, and he was favorable because I am kind of progressive on some things. I don't want, if your 19-year-old kid has trouble with drugs, I don't want to put him in jail for 20 years. I'm not pro-drugs, but I'm also, I know we all make mistakes. People in my family make mistakes. There's probably not one of you in here that doesn't have some family member or distant family member that made a mistake, and I think we ought to try to treat it more as a health problem than putting people in jail for 20 years. That's the libertarian in me. So Colbert kind of agreed with that. And we got along okay, but then I was assaulted. I was hit one time in the back very hard and had 6 ribs broken. 3 of them were separated, and I had a contusion as big as a silver dollar on my lung, which I coughed up blood for 2 years, and then they took part of my lung out. So I was very injured, and it's not funny to me or to my wife. And they thought it was funny, and they had some idiot C-list actor who said he was going to buy a drink for the guy who attacked me, and it's like, really, if we said that about, look, Nancy Pelosi's husband was horribly beaten. I didn't say one thing about that. I didn't try to get into any of that. All I did was wish him well to get better. That's what we should do with each other. I mean, it's ridiculous. But to think it's funny, and that's just not, they would never do that to a Democrat. And they blame us for, like, Donald Trump's inciting violence. Mm-hmm. And yet they have said over and over again how gleeful they were and how they'd like to buy a drink to the person who assaulted me from behind. This wasn't a fight. This was an assault where I was hit one time from behind without seeing the guy hit me.
Well, the thing I took away, I knew the severity of it, but then reading more of a description in the Colbert thing, that is 2 years of that. I don't work too well with limitation and all. How did you deal with that, with how active you are and what you had to do?
I've never felt pain like that. I mean, some people have cracked a rib, say it's painful. I had 6, and they were separated. 3 of them were not touching, so the bones just would grind on the bones until they finally would stick together. And to get out of bed, because you have to sit up somehow, I tied a rope to the bottom of my bed, and I would pull a rope to sit up to get out of bed for weeks. So it was not pleasant, but pain makes us better. We get through it, and I'm fairly back to normal. So
good.
For an old guy.
So we come up now at this point, the second encounter with Dr. Fauci. I have, this is May of 2020, and you're discussing back to work and back to school. And as you know, that's where I had expertise, school. And I told you backstage in this very county, and listeners know this, where we are, Dr. David Damsker, boldly, and we had him on, and thoroughly, he's a calm guy, said, the 3-foot rule. I know we could say no feet, doesn't matter. But the 3-foot rule, not the 6, got everybody back in school. They got a phone call from somebody without any medical background in the governor's office. The people here, he's now in the basement of the public health center. And we shout out to him every once in a while. So I'm particularly interested, and I think you were citing a lot back to school and work, but particularly school with Sweden.
The statistics in Sweden were no child died, no child that was of school age went to school, nobody died. And so people say, well, no, we're doing it to protect the teachers. They're at risk. Note the statistics on teachers either getting it or dying from it were the exact same as every other profession, welder, carpenter, car worker, executive. The statistics were the same. There was no increase. And they stayed in school. They didn't wear masks. They stayed in school. They went to school every day. There might have been a week or two where they didn't go to school. It worked. And we knew that early on. We knew early on that kids, when we were hearing about it in China, that kids weren't dying. It was like, oh, the kids aren't sick. Kids aren't sick. And there were all these theories, still some good theories, why the kids didn't get sick.
But we knew it. We knew it from the very beginning. And Fauci would kind of agree. On the school issue, there's 26 different times he says something in a matter of 2 weeks, and he's on both sides of the issue each time. But if he hears fearmongers and he's on with the fearmongers, he says, well, we should go back to school, but maybe not yet. Maybe it's too dangerous. And this is a year in, a year and a half in, 2 years in. And then people became used to it. But the best hypocrisy and the best way to defeat these people was finding the teachers union president who's taking his kids to a private school and dropping them off while the rest of our kids don't get to go to school. Or the one in the secretary of Levine, Richard Levine.
Oh, our buddy, Rachel Levine. Yes.
I don't wish anybody any harm or any meanness, but it makes me mad that she takes her mom out and tells her, leave your mom in the nursing home. I'm taking my mom home because I know the nursing home's a crappy place to be. All the people
Now, that's an admiral now, or the highest admiral. This might be a federal offense.
You want to get mad, think about the people whose loved ones were putting their hands to windows as they were dying. Think of all the people who died alone. It makes me so mad to think of this person. The hypocrisy of her and Newsom going to the French Laundry to dine out, and Whitmer's husband going out boating. Sure, you should all be able to do that, but they shouldn't be telling us to do one thing while they do the other.
One of the things I just discovered yesterday, and soon as I saw Philadelphia and a major thief, that always gets our attention here. No, it wasn't Larry Krasner. He had nothing. He's not in this book. You talk about a guy named Devron Brown, who apparently took millions of dollars through the COVID money, PPO, I think it was called. And the only reason he was caught, he came back a while later.
Second round.
And did it again, and he was from Philadelphia.
So here's the genius way your politicians set this up. Billions and billions. I don't know. First was $45 billion. They ran out of that in 2 weeks. They did another $45 billion. You don't have to work, just apply. Every business applied. Everybody applied for it, but it was on the honor system. So tell us how much you normally make a year, how many employees you have, and how much you need. Million? Come back for a million. So this guy would get like $5 million. He has no business at all. He made it all completely up. He was getting Lamborghinis and Bugattis and all these fancy cars, and bought a house, bought a beach. Why not have a beach house too? He got a beach house. And then he came back and they caught him because he spent the first $5 million and came back for another $5 million. So, but there were terrible systems. And the thing is people say, and this is what Republicans said. I voted against all of it. I voted against every bit of it. And it's not because I hate you. It's that I didn't cause this problem. I wasn't for the lockdowns. The Republicans all said, the Republicans voted for this stuff too. Almost every Republican voted for this. They said, well, government created the misery of the people. Now we have to give them some money. It's like, well, maybe government shouldn't create the misery of people by closing all the businesses.
While we have you here, how do they arrive at all these figures, though? They just make it up. Tell us, right? Our listeners, they just say it's $1 billion, and somebody says, yeah, why not $2 billion? It doesn't seem to be any math.
I mean, nobody is concerned. They have no concept for the money. And I think we borrow $2 million every minute now. And
wow.
That's why, even if you have mixed feelings on whether we should support Ukraine or not, I'm sympathetic to their cause. We have no money. So if you're on Medicare or Social Security and you want to give up part of yours, they're short also. We don't have enough money to fund that. Should we take that money and give it to Ukraine? That's what you're doing. But you're not even really doing that. We're just borrowing the money. We're going to borrow $2 trillion this year. Interest payments have gone up. Interest payments are going to exceed the number one item in the spending, which is military. Interests are greater than military. And it could get worse. It could get way worse. If we go back to a time, I bought my first house with 11% interest in 1991. If we get that again, it's not just you that will suffer. We will all suffer when the government has to pay all that $34 trillion debt at 11%. You know, we're looking at 4 and 5% now, but it could be a lot worse. And there could come a time that you wake up and nobody wants our debt anymore, and no one will buy it. We are incredibly lucky that we're the reserve currency of the world. We have been since World War II. And some say we will continue to be. But there's going to be a time that people wake up and say we're profligate, we are not wise with our money, and that they shouldn't buy our debt. And there's a lot of countries that don't want to buy it just because they're adversarial to us now, too. China and Russia and North Korea and things. But there come a time when nobody buys it. It could be instead of that you have lost 5% of your currency in 1 year. What if you lose 5% in 1 day? Or what if you lose 100% in a day? During the German hyperinflation in the 1920s, you've seen the pictures in the textbook, people were buying bread, and it went up. It was 1,000 marks. Then it was 10,000 marks. Then it was 1,000,000 marks. It was 10 million marks for a loaf of bread. The money became so worthless, they burned it for fuel.
Wow.
I don't want that to happen to our country, but someone's got to stand up and say, that's why another thing Donald Trump's got to stand up and say, all Republicans have to stand up and say, we do have to reform Social Security. We do have to reform Medicare. The age of eligibility is going to have to go up, or you're going to have to double the taxes. I don't think the working people of this country can pay 15% and their employer pays 15%. Right now we do 7.5% and 7.5%. We can't pay 15 and 15 and people still have enough to live on. So I don't think we can raise the taxes enough, but the easiest way is we're living longer. We're just going to have to work longer, and it's bad news, but I didn't create longevity. I didn't create modern world, but we need to do something about it.
You know, we've been getting people on Twitter, though, immediately when you've come on and you were kind enough to say that you would be here tonight. They want to know if this will be translated into Russian, tonight's transcript. We get the Russian background.
That's hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah. So we've been talking close to an hour, and is everybody ready? We've told you a little bit, and I think Senator Paul has won this audience over. So Dan may help me in the back. Feel free to, Dan, if I get in trouble here. Senator Paul and I differ on one thing that I know, maybe a couple of others. Maybe who the greatest golfer
is
ever.
But the more I'm on your show, I think you're coming around.
Trying to see if there's anything else we might do. Who's the greatest golfer ever?
At this point, probably Tiger Woods.
It's Jack Nicklaus, but okay. So we got two things. Thank you.
Now, Jack Nicklaus is probably the greatest golfer and greatest person.
Okay.
Because he's done an enormous amount of things for charity and is a wonderful guy. But there was I think the golf was more competitive during Tiger Woods' era than Jack Nicklaus. Jack Nicklaus was amazing, and I don't want to take anything from him. But golf has become more competitive because more people play it now. So when Tiger Woods came about, it's like you have, you know, a much bigger percentage of the public that is coming up through the ranks. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just extraordinary for him to win the tournaments more than it was for Nicklaus. And that's nothing to take away from Nicklaus.
All right, I go with who won the most majors, but that's old school. All right, that's just the prelim. But TikTok, and I'm fascinated, Senator, must be wherever you go. Talk radio listeners for years were saying, get rid of TikTok, block it. They weren't even saying, let the business stay here. Suddenly, Rand Paul is against it. Donald Trump then hears you, and he appears to be against doing anything with them. And now I feel I'm in front of the hostile audience.
Well, there are things that you can hate. I've never been on TikTok. And you can hate the idea that the stuff's addictive and your kids are all over it and you don't want to be on it. But that's a parental problem. You don't want to... You don't want the government in charge of what your kind of kid clothes your kids wear, where they can wear boys' or girls' clothes. You also have to patrol your kids' phone and what they're on. I mean, it just is our responsibility. I'm not saying it's easy. I've had three boys. Taking away their phone, particularly when they got bigger than me, was hard. I'm not saying it always worked. But here's the problem. There's a Bill of Rights problem with taking TikTok away. It's owned 60% by international investors. Some of them live in Pennsylvania. 60% of it is owned by international investors. 20% is owned by two Chinese engineers that developed it. And the remaining 20% is owned by the employees. The employees, 7,000 of them, live in America. They're Americans. So if you hate them and you think that they're involved with Chinese communists or whatever, if you want to take their property, in America you don't take someone's property without convicting them of a crime and going to a court. You cannot take TikTok. If you take it without a trial, you're as bad as the Chinese.
Okay, well, wait a minute. We'll have a trial. I would agree with you on that. But you seem to
The bill doesn't have any trial. Bill says you have to sell it in 6 months or we're going to take it.
You're diminishing, though, the threat here. And we talk backstage, and maybe you're right, and you are inside this more than I am. But you don't see the Communist Chinese Party, I think, as insidious or as much of a threat, and this as a national security issue.
If you read my book that we've been talking about, you see that I don't like the Chinese communists much, and I don't trust them as far as I can throw them, and I have no use for them. I wrote a book called The Case Against Socialism. I've got no use for socialists anywhere. But at the same time, we cannot behave like them to thwart them. you know, we become more, you know, it's an authoritarian thing to take someone's property. But there is a free speech issue. So 170 million, primarily teenage Americans, use this thing. They express themselves. Some people have businesses. They do funny little dances. They probably have cat videos. I don't know what they do. But they have these videos, and that is an expression of themselves. If you tell a teenager, let's make them 18, so it's an adult, can they go to court? You tell an 18-year-old they cannot put a dance video on there because they're selling it, and the people who buy it are no longer going to do dance videos on there. That's taking away the express rights. It's also sold on an app store, the Apple App Store. So things that are sold on the Apple App Store, we can't control it. We may not like Apple. We may want to control it. But the government can't control it because of the First Amendment, because they're expressing things. So if it's an app that allows you to express yourself, let's say it's an app that's the Washington Post app that's sold at the Apple Store. If we banned it, that would be against free speech. It's the same way with expressing yourself. So there's a First Amendment problem with doing it. There's also a Fifth Amendment problem. It says you cannot take property without a conviction.
Your read, then, the Senate, both on left and right, you don't think
you're
going to
win.
Push.
Your side's going to win. They're going to ban it.
They but, are. Yeah.
Well, if it comes up.
Okay.
The thing about Washington about sometimes slowing it down is it is beneficial. Passed unanimously in the committee in the House, and then the vote was like 320-70 or something. It was overwhelming that it passed in the House. It hasn't been brought up in the Senate. And there is a political question for Democrats. Democrats have been winning the youth vote forever, and they're kind of afraid of the backlash of youth if the youth all say, oh, Democrats, you're just as bad as the Republicans. You're wanting to ban what we do on TikTok. And so I think they're a little bit afraid of the politics. But they're, by and large, most of them have publicly, Biden has said he'll sign it. They've all said they'll sign it. But I think we don't defeat Chinese authoritarians by becoming like them. And I think it's a mistake. And there's a difference between hating something and wanting to ban it. You know, for example, the best case to way to look at this is Brandenburg versus Ohio. It's a famous free speech case from the 60s. It's a terrible racist, says all these foul things that I wouldn't even repeat from any stage, but it goes to the Supreme Court. And guess who defends him? An African-American at the ACLU and a Jewish guy at the ACLU, and they defend him, not because there's anything defensible about what they're saying or this despicable person. They defend him because you have to defend bad speech if you want to have the rest of the speech.
How about a little lightning round? If I throw a few people at you, we get a quick impression. There's one name we have not mentioned tonight, Mitch McConnell.
I'm a no.
Nancy Pelosi.
I'm a no there, too.
Must be a lightning round, right?
So. Yeah, come on. President Biden.
You know, I think it's just so sad. I mean, it really is pathetic. I mean, he probably could run dead even because of Pennsylvania, frankly. By not, you know, look at your senator up here, you know. I mean, it's like... But I think he cognitively is in decline, I think is the nicest way to put it.
And one more, the other senator, John Fetterman.
I've tried to be nice to him. I really have. There was a, you know, look, he has a health issue. So I've tried not to go after a guy with a health mm-hmm. issue. He did a video that he put on Twitter, and I actually thought it was kind of funny. It was he's doing an interview, and the camera's on him, and coming in the door is him. So he comes in the door on his own interview, and, you know, he's been accused of having like a doppelganger because he can't function, so he has a double that does things for him. But he made fun of it on a video, and I think self-deprecating humor is kind of funny. And so I complimented him. This was 3 or 4 months ago. But now he's back to using profanity about me and saying I'm keeping us there on the weekend just for fun. It's like, I would rather go home on the weekend. I'm a normal person. I want to go home. I'd rather go home and play golf. The only time I keep him there on the weekend is because they're spending all your money and someone's got to try to stop them. But he discounts that and has said some very mean things to him. And I've run into him and I said, look, I'm going to have no words with you. We'll have no conversations and I'll have nothing to do with you if you're in public going to say those things. Like your other senator, Casey, I don't like any of his politics. I don't think he's good and I'd vote against him. But I've never had him saying things in public that are nasty about me or vice versa, and I won't. I have nothing bad to say about him personally. He had surgery a year or two ago. I wish him well, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But Fetterman is acting in an inappropriate way, and I hope you get rid of him as soon as possible.
One of your great projects, and with listeners here tonight, we wanted to hear from you, the government waste, the yearly waste. Take us through. There's got to be a lot of contenders for that. Does Sergio and your other guys, or do you ultimately make all the decisions on these?
Well, we celebrate Festivus.
Right.
Which means I got a lot of problems with you people. And we decided to make the you people the government and to talk about all the problems we have and try to keep it lighthearted. But we go through all of this, and this hasn't just started recently. And I'll give you an example just to show you how bad it is. William Proxmire was a conservative Democrat. This is a while ago when there used to be conservative Democrats. And he used to do the Golden Fleece Award. This is late 70s, mid-70s on through. One of his, and he said this is one of his favorites, and I've had my staff make it up as a picture. It was $50,000 to study whether or not fish are more aggressive when they drink tequila or gin.
Or bourbon.
But, I mean, how ridiculous is that? So one of the ones I put up, and this is now 30 years later, it's the same agency, the National Science Foundation. They do all these behavioral stuff, which I think if you write for Cosmo magazine, it's your own money, and you want to do a funny survey or something, do it. But we don't have enough money for Social Security or Medicare or anything, and we're doing this. So the one I always point out is $750,000. We now have inflation to study whether or not Japanese quail are more sexually promiscuous on cocaine. And I always say we could have just polled the audience. I think probably the answer is yes.
Well, to that point, the spending of money, the audit the Fed, how's that project with listeners? I have 10 questions in here. They love that idea. Most of us do.
My dad originated the bill, and for at least one term when he was there in his last term, he introduced it on the House side, and I was the key sponsor on the left side. Ron Paul and the Fed. And the Fed. And so, yeah, I'm all in on it. I forced a vote in 2014 on it, and I forced a vote this year on it. And when I say I forced a vote, people are like, you know, why is Fauci not in jail? I don't control it. Why don't we vote on more things? I don't control the voting either. So when the Democrats are in charge, we have no power as to what comes to the floor, unless we use our body, all 41 of us together, and say we're going to work as a body and stop things. The problem is Mitch McConnell is usually siding with the other side, and so really we don't have the 41 to stick together on it. But with Audit the Fed, I've been able to force the vote twice. I think the first time we got like 35 votes, we lost maybe 8 Republicans, and I think we got Bernie Sanders on at that time. This time, I think we were at 37 or 38. We lost 3 Republicans, I think, on that particular day. I think we picked up 2 or 3. We might have had Bernie again, and we might have gotten Tammy Baldwin. Some issues shouldn't be right versus left. It's sort of like transparency, like on people revealing if somebody at the vaccine committee gets money from a vaccine maker. That's just transparency. Right and left could like that. On the Fed, some people write from the left perspective and say, you know what, the Federal Reserve seems to be making more money for rich people and actually taking it from poor people, that really there is a transfer of wealth by policy. And if you look at the last several years, what happened during COVID, when none of the ordinary people could work, people who had a lot of money made a lot more money because they could make more and the stock market keeps going like this. When the Federal Reserve prints the money, who gets the money first? Rich people get the money first, and it tends to go into the market. It goes up, and then when you finally get it and you're spending it, now the price of your groceries costs twice as much, and the middle class has a more difficult time enjoying all the new money. You get it, but your wages lag behind your prices a lot of times, and then you catch up and you're about even. If you're on Social Security, you got 9% COLA. What did inflation, what did food, what did steaks do, and what did meat and poultry do? Maybe 25% last year. You probably break even, maybe, if you're lucky on Social Security. So, but Audit the Fed, we haven't been able to get enough Democrats for it. We have almost all the Republicans for it, but we have had struggled to get more than a handful of Democrats.
You personally, any interest in being the minority leader and ultimately the majority leader?
If we hold the election on the internet. I had the election on my Twitter account and 162,000 people, and I got 97% of the vote.
Wow.
But the internet is not the Senate. 49 people right now get to vote, and if we took over the Senate, it'd be 51 or 2. There's a lot of allegiances that are very, very personal. I mean, we're talking about a small clique of people. McConnell has won through the years is because many of the members who really are not that noticeable, they're kind of like furniture. If you move them here or here, they're about the same wherever you put them in the room. the furniture has always voted for him because he raises the money from corporate America. He gives it to them to win elections, and they vote for him for leadership. Also, there would be the division somewhat on foreign policy, and that I believe more in an America first, more in a we got to take care of our business here. We have pressing problems at home. Many of them really they'd send troops into Ukraine. I mean, they'll send troops everywhere. They have troops in Africa. They have troops everywhere. And I'm for less of that. So that might not be a majority position in my caucus. Now, when I go home and I have a crowd like this at home, I think the majority of people are actually with me. If I go up into the mountains of Appalachia and I'll have a fireman come up to me, I'll have a policeman, I'll have a city council, they'll come up to me and they say, you know what, we got a lot of problems in our county that we need taken care of before you send any money to Ukraine. I don't get anybody coming up to me and say, please send my money to Ukraine.
Absolutely. Probably the best question and comment. First, the question we received from a listener, Steve. Is Steve here tonight from Newtown, Pennsylvania? All right, there we go. Where would you recommend starting a visit to the Bourbon Trail?
There's lots of good bourbon, and the only thing that'll get me in trouble is by telling you I like one better than the other, you know. But it is pretty a miraculous sort of thing that's brought millions and millions of dollars of business to Kentucky. You know, everybody was aware that people went to Napa and Sonoma for the wine tour, and it's a big sort of tourist industry. The Bourbon Trail's become big for us, and sort of combined with the horses, my recommendation isn't necessarily one distillery over another, but if you come and you want to visit a distillery, come during race season, which is April. There's about 3 weeks of racing, I think Keeneland and Churchill Downs, and then the same thing in October. And, you know, during the racing, and you don't have to come to the Kentucky Derby's wonderful, but there's 400,000 people. You could go this weekend to Keeneland in Lexington, be 5,000 to 10,000 people. And it's out in the countryside. You can see all the horse country, and you can do distilleries in Lexington, Frankfort, Bardstown, Louisville. There's lots to enjoy.
And Steve's comment, I think we all share tonight, our first speaker series post-COVID. Steve wrote, "Know this, America needs many more voices like Rand Paul." Thank you, Senator. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Dom Giordano, weekdays noon till 3, from Talk Radio 1210, WPHD.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.